Hello and welcome to the Women's Cricket South Africa podcast, where we discuss all things cricket. Visit our website, womenscricket.co.za.
Hi and welcome to another episode of Women's Cricket South Africa. We've got lots of cricket happening in the Northern Hemisphere because it's nice and warm there. And today we have Griselda Britt all the way from Hong Kong. And we've got Jenna Sill all the way from somewhere in South Africa. Welcome, girls. How are you all doing?
Hi, Maddie. Thank you for having me. All good, thanks.
Cool. Hi, Gris. How's Hong Kong?
Warm. We're very warm. I see you guys are nice and cold and without electricity there.
Welcome to lovely South Africa. Right. Okay. We need to talk cricket. But first, the highlight that we just received, Lizelle Lee retiring. Jenna, were you shocked to see that?
Very shocked. As I logged on for the podcast, I actually got the press release. Yeah, it was a little bit shocking, but at the same time, I kind of saw it coming. She hasn't been performing lately in all forms of international cricket. So with the birth of her first child, it's not a huge shock. She is looking to go into family and explore other parts of her career. And I think it's exciting for her that she's able to make the decision on her own terms. Hopefully, obviously, we don't know the ins and outs of her decision. But hopefully she continues growing cricket in Northwest, which is her province. That's where she plays franchise cricket. And if she can make a difference there in at grassroots level, then hopefully cricket will continue on the up there.
Cool. Grace, what do you have to say about retiring from certain cricket?
I think you kind of know when you know, right? I think there's a lot of people that wanted Lizelle Lee to have a really long career. But as Jenna said, I think you could see for the longest of time that her head was maybe not that much into it. You could see, if we have to be completely honest, she wasn't in the best shape, both physically and mentally. She really struggled with her cricket. So, you know, when your fitness levels, etc., is maybe not where it should be when you're trying to make a comeback, it's okay if your form is solid, but she's also struggled with form. And then when the runs aren't coming and, you know, you're far away from home and, you know, you've played for a long time and you have a family, I'm sure it becomes harder and harder to try and keep your mind in it. And I think also respect to her for, acknowledging it and stepping away, knowing that she feels the way she does, because it's not an easy decision, right? Especially when, I think it was pretty similar with me. She's not exactly that old that, you know, it is like the normal age to retire. Probably when you hit your 30s, you understand your game the best. So, respect to her for sticking her hand up and saying, you know, she's had a good career and she's done and she wants to focus on something else rather than, you know, trying to stay in it for another 4 years or whatever and taking someone else's spot that's keen to contribute.
Yeah, now talking about taking someone else's spot, it gives now space for a new opener with Laura. And who do you think will fill in that gap?
Well, I'm hoping that it's going to be Angie Steyn. Just simply because of, like, I'm a big fan of her and I think that she's one of the up-and-coming batters coming through the system. She performs at provincial level. She performs at SA emerging level, which I think is important. And she's really been in the system for a long time. I think she fits into the team well. She's fit. She's there amongst the players. And I think that if she can just prove herself and get there at national level, then she's definitely one to look out for.
Yeah, I think that sort of solved itself in a way, right, Maddie? Because we were talking a lot in our previous podcasts about that opening spot and the problem of moving Tasman Brits around so much. And then, you know, we were waiting for Lizelle Lee to come back. They want to stick with Laura as an opener. contrary to what I would love to see. But okay, let's just accept now that, you know, Laura is their opener. But I think whoever the coach is, if it's still Hilton, they'll have to really make a decision on that spot, and give the players a bit of time to settle there, right? So whether it is Tasman or Andre, I think we should really allow these players to spend a bit of time up there and find their groove.
Yeah, for sure. The coach needs to have confidence in somebody and just keep them there. Okay, test cricket. Very unfortunate that it rained out. We couldn't get a result, but in the end, there was great performances from both sides. Chris, what did you think about South Africa finally playing a test match again?
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I'm going to be a little bit controversial and say, I think it is good that women play test cricket, but it's not, we have to always ask, why do we do it, right? So if we're not going to play any of that sort of longer format type of games at franchise level, why would we spend any time playing test cricket at international level? Because think about South Africa. They've not been able to ever play that longer format. So first of all, how do you even select a side? You can see teams like England. They actually have test sides where they play test players because they know that these players feel more comfortable with the longer format, etc. But yeah, I'm happy that we get the opportunity to experience that we get to put the baggy green on, and you know, it was nice for the youngsters to be able to have a go at it. It's always nice to get into the whites. And I think we did well under the circumstances. I don't know what you feel, Jenna.
Yeah, I do think that certain players did well under the circumstances. I do think that obviously because South African players are not used to it, and we had, was it 8 or 9 debutants on that first day. And that was exciting to see, but also worrying because even Sune Lis, the captain, had not played a test match before. And, you know, it's a bit of like mixed emotions. Like, are we trusting our girls to take us forward from that level? Or are we just kind of letting it happen and just seeing what happens? And I feel like there was just a slight lack of preparation. You could definitely see that the bowlers got tired towards the end of the bowling innings. Not very often had a bowling load of so many overs, like on a single day, which is worrying, yes, but also understandable because it's the first time in 8 years that South Africa has played test cricket. So, and then you also have to go back and say, but in that space of 8 years, England has only played 10. So yes, it is like a big difference. There is a big gap between the two countries, but it's not a huge like standout performance. Like in the last 8 years, England has played, let's say, 2024 test matches. So yes, the Ashes are there for those two top countries to perform at test level, but then equally, you know, it's not that big of a difference. So I just think maybe a little bit underprepared, but I do think that the girls tried their best. They stepped up and you know, it counts when you see players like Tumisi Kukune sticking her hand up and standing on the other end with Marizon Cup. And for me, that's the kind of grit that I want to see. And while it was disappointing that it was only 4 days and that last day got rained out, you know, it is a start for test cricket. And hopefully, yeah, I don't know, where do you think test cricket kind of fits in? Do you prefer the female game being 20 and 50 overs, or do you want it to be 4 day, or do you want it to be 5 day?
Yeah, so I think, and that's back to my conversation, like I'm not quite sure what the ICC is trying to achieve by bringing in test cricket into the women's game, unless we're going to really drive the longer format at provincial or county level, right? So the men play test cricket, but they also play 4-day or 3-day cricket in their counties, right, in their provincial setups. So unless you're going to do that and really make tests part of women's tours, I don't necessarily see the point of them other than trying to uphold a tradition or something like that. But if that's the case, then, you know, a once-off test match, I guess, like this, it's just great for the experience. For me, it's not about a preference. Of course, the longer format of the game is always like the more nice traditional thing to watch. But I also don't think we should just do it for the sake of it. For me, if you really want to see good test match cricket in women, you have to do it at all levels. Otherwise, I don't quite understand what the point is. Like, but yeah, it might be quite a hard view, but we all know that I am quite straight with my opinions.
No, go for it, it's refreshing. I think that while we need, if we want to play international test cricket, yes, I agree, we need to play provincial longer format cricket. However, at the moment, in the current standing of the country, it's kind of impossible because there are only 5 girls per province, and that's only in the top 6 teams who are contracted, and that amount of money that they're receiving is not enough to live off of. So it's difficult to take time off of work for the rest of the team, even for those contracted players, to play a longer format of cricket. So yes, it's fun to say, yeah, we have to do it at domestic level, but you have to invest in it in domestic level. So yeah, it all comes down to money and how it works for the players and for the coaching staff, because if you are unable to take off work because you have to make a living, then you can't play longer format cricket.
I think what you're talking about, Jenna, is sort of a problem across, right? And yeah, I mean, like I'm saying, it's not that I necessarily think we have to do a longer format of the game. Yeah. I think the women's game has been great in the shorter format. We've already like really grown in terms of the WBBL, etc. It's kind of what put us on the map in terms of advertisements and sponsorships and stuff like that. So I would ride that way for as long as possible and focus on that until, you know, I guess the money is there for us to be able to do longer format cricket at a lower level in order to prepare the girls for something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So test cricket was fun. The girls are in England. They spent some time in Wales. They had the warm-up match. What do we expect from the ODIs against England coming up? The openers, who's going to perform in the bowling? Will it all fall on Marizan again? Yeah. What is your thoughts?
Okay, cool. So I think it's going to be exciting. If we just take back from the shorter format of the game, looking back at the World Cup, there was one win and one loss against England. So that kind of gives like a good indication of where both teams are at. However, with the loss of some South African players, also with the loss of some British players, it does put a little bit of a spanner in the works. So I think in the English team without Catherine Brunt and without Anya Shrubsole, it does put a little bit more pressure on the pace bowlers from the English setup. And I'm excited to see how those girls step up, to see Kate Cross and, you know, those girls just to step up with the new ball and see what they're going to do. So I think it's going to be a challenge for both sides. And I'm very excited for it. I don't have too many predictions about who's going to play, who's not. I just hope that whoever does gets a full opportunity to perform and that it's not just one game. If you don't perform, you're dropped. And for me, it's important that the players like are allowed to express themselves in a way that they feel comfortable doing. And obviously there's a game plan and their KPIs and things that we want to achieve, but just allow the girls to express themselves. And I think for me, that's what I'm most excited for.
Yeah. And just to supplement that as well, I think as Jenna mentioned, I don't think there's you can have too big of a prediction knowing which way this is going to go. But I guess one thing you have to remember, it's never easy to tour and to go and beat someone else in their backyard. So South Africa would really have to graft, but they've shown some good promise. And I think in the warm up match they did end up losing that warm up match to England, but not by far, you know. So I think we'll feel comfortable in sort of what we've achieved in even if it's the test, and I know the test we can't really use as kind of the benchmark, but I think what we can use it as a benchmark of like our mental strength, knowing that, you know, we can stick it out for 4 days and get that match to tie, etc., rather than just being a complete walkover. Long gone are the days anyways that South Africa is a complete walkover, and England will know that as well, right? So I'm excited. Tanay Loos is in good form. I'd be really interested to see how South Africa approaches bringing Danae back into this setup after all this time at the helm, because she's done so well up until this point. And we've done well, actually, with a lot of our key players not playing over the last couple of tournaments. So yeah, it's a team that's settling nicely. I really enjoy watching them.
Yeah, I just think with the incoming idea of Danae coming back into the setup is slightly worrying for me, because I just think she brings a different dynamic into the team, and the momentum that the girls have had so far has been so honest, and they've been playing honest cricket, in my opinion. And I'm not sure whether Danae's presence in the team will disrupt that. Obviously, we don't know until it happens. But she is a player who, she's a very good cricketer, and she knows how to cricket. We'll give her that. But she does add a very different dynamic on the field. She plays hard cricket. She's aggressive on the field, which is in some places and in some environments a good thing. But it is slightly worrying that the momentum of the honest cricket that the momentum Proteas have been playing so far might be disrupted.
Yeah, and that's such an interesting topic. Sorry, Maddie, we're going a bit away from the tournament itself or the series itself, but Sunay and Danae, such vastly different leaders, right, in personality. And I think I've said this to you guys before, with me when I used to be a captain, how I was as a leader didn't always resonate well or result in good sort of response from some of the players. And I do feel that, look, South Africa cannot do without Danae. They need her. She's good enough. She's in the top five of the world. If she plays, she's one of the best actual players. But the interesting thing would be to see if they bring her back in a leadership role, because of the way the team has responded really well to Sunay. And to be completely honest and frank, I didn't actually think that Sunay was going to do as well as she did now. But this team responds really well to her and her style. And so that would be an interesting dynamic to see when she comes back. But yeah, I mean, for now, I guess the team are just focus on what they're currently doing and doing really well and have been doing under her. And to be fair to her, her own game, I keep saying it, has just also improved her batting. Her role in the side has really cemented since she's taken over this leadership role. So should Danae also come back in and take over the captaincy, it would be interesting to see what it does to her role in the team.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think responsibility definitely looks good on Sunay, as you said, Grizz. But it also looks good on Marizane. I mean, if you look at her being one of the main senior players in that middle order, she's really taken the bull by the horns and rolled with it. And she's to me, she's kind of come out of her shell in the field. I mean, often you see on the field how she just like goes into herself and just, you know, just does her own thing. But when sort of when Sune is captaining and she is able to give her opinion on the field, Marizan, I mean, I just think that she's flourishing under that like senior role. And with Danae on the field, would that then overpower Marizan and push her back into her shell? Or would it then like help, like would she be able to keep that going?
Yeah, interesting. I really enjoy watching Marizan bat at the moment. To be honest, I've always felt that she was an absolutely phenomenal batsman. She's never really, if we were all completely honest with each other, performed the way according to the talent that she has. So her runs doesn't portray how talent, because she is a phenomenal. I used to watch her. She is phenomenal. I used to watch her in the nets. She would just hit 400, 500 balls on a tour and a net session, just in throwdowns. And she's really, and you're actually quite correct, she's really starting to settle a little bit. It's like she understands the game better. She trusts herself a little bit better. I feel like the pressure is a little bit off her as well. She's taken on that she's taken on a bit more responsibility in the sense that, you know, if she's not going to score, she's not going to score runs and, you know, everybody around her falls. She's kind of gone like, yeah, listen, I'm here. I'm going to hold this middle order together. And she's done that pretty well as well. Yeah, loads of dynamics in a team always, right? Always. And so it is interesting to see when people come in and go out. And even Lizelle leaving, it will be interesting to see how that top order, that dynamic, if there's anyone there like sticking their hands up and how that changes. So,
yeah. I also wanted to ask you, Grizz, about the bowlers who were left out of the test match side. We know that Shibnam had some form of niggle. Ayabonga, I don't really know why she didn't play. And then Chloe was out, and those are three very big players that didn't play in that test, two because of injury, and Ayabonga, who knows. So what do you think their presence on the field coming into the rest of the tour will impact that bowling unit that bowled throughout the test match?
Yeah, I think, to be completely honest, I didn't necessarily feel like our bowling unit fired as well in the test game. We bowled some really average overs in there. I think they were batting at like a decent run rate as well. Yeah, I think Hilton probably had that thinking, what we were talking about, like, what does this test match mean for us really in the long run? Like, would we rest as many of our players for in case England comes out and like we have to bowl 100 overs at them, which was the case basically. And like you said, loads of overs, and you don't want that on Shibnam if she has a niggle, etc. I think South Africa is pretty settled in their top five bowlers and in their bowling unit. And I think, to be honest, if the test bowling side, I guess they must have known, right, sort of what was, why they're in that dynamic, that some players would be rested, etc. When you play at that level, you kind of just take every single chance you get to play. If you have a good match and you get to play the next one, you just ride that wave. But if you're not, you just keep bowling in the nets until you make that, you know, core five, core six. But I think South Africa will look forward to having those quicks back onto the park. I don't really think there was anyone standing out to the point that they would feel hard done by if they were left out because the old bowlers came back, and there weren't anyone that really, to me, stuck out that I was like, oh, you know, she really deserves to kick out Ayabonga for an ODI, right? So yeah, unfortunately there's only 11 spots, so you have to make the most of it.
Yeah, totally agree. Then I just also wanted to ask about Chloe Tryon there in the middle order. And we know how good she is, and we know how good of a finisher she is. But is it worth playing both Chloe and Nonkululeko Mlaba as that left arm orthodox spin? Or would you select Chloe only and put another seamer in?
Yeah, I think that's tricky, and especially now because you could see Hilton wanted to play around with Lizelle in the middle order, right? So I didn't really think that they expected her to retire this soon. So you could see they were also kind of seeing if, she would fit into that middle order, and you could maybe use Chloe as a pure all rounder, and or choose the best of the two of the left armers. But to be completely honest, once again, I think we have to decide what it is that we're going into each match. If we want to have the left arm spinner, then I would probably just go with Chloe. I mean, there's no point in having both of them unless Ngoleku, sorry, unless she can really, really out or out bowl someone else in that bowling unit. We have to, if we choose someone as an all-rounder, they have to bowl their allotted overs. We're a bit guilty of bowling eight bowlers, three full-time bowlers and six part-time bowlers. We need to start being really professional about it. And if we choose someone as a real all-rounder, then they have to bowl their allotted overs, rather than trying to do it this piecemeal stuff.
Yeah, totally agree. And how do you feel about Sune bowling so many overs as many as she did in the World Cup?
Yeah, Sune is always a bit tricky because she is a bit of a wicket taker, right? But I do feel like once again that I don't know if you see the role that kind of Joe Root plays in the England men's side, right? He literally only comes in as like a surprise element, right? When nothing else works, and I think. While Danae is not there, Sune actually brings in the leg spin element, but she's bowling the ball really slowly through the air. And teams that really sweep well, they take her on and use their feet well. They take her on pretty well. And if she struggles early on, she seems to be put off a length quite quickly. So I don't see her as like in the top five of that of the bowling unit. I think she should really just bowl when it's really like a last resort thing, right? Unless she's chosen as a full all-rounder, but then she has to bowl all her overs, not this two over, three over, half tracker stuff, right? You have to then get your mind into it, bowl your 10 overs. If you go for 50, great. If you go for 80, then you had just as bad a day as one of the top five that would have had the same bad day, right? But yeah. I think we just need to really make a decision on that.
And then the keeping role in the team kind of is a little bit confusing at the moment with Trisha keeping, and I do believe that in the squad at the moment she does have the best hands. But I think it's bizarre that she's batting so far down the order. How do you feel about where she should be batting?
Yeah, I mean, ideally you always want your keeper to be a really good batsman to contribute with the bat, right? But I guess for us in South Africa, unfortunately, we've just not had like the depth in that sense. We haven't had like for the longest of time, we haven't had a keeper that was going to average 30, right? And Trisha's been in that team for long enough, and she's good enough. But I think in the makeup of the team, she just can't come up earlier. But then at the same time, having a keeper with good hands and someone that's not going to like, because if you think about, we have the bowling unit, right? You have Kapi, you need good keeper. You can't have a part-time keeper up there. And I think we tried it a little bit with Lizelle, which wasn't a bad option, where, if she could at least, if she's a semi-decent keeper and you don't need to sacrifice another spot in the team for that position, then great. But at the moment we don't have that, right? So we kind of almost have to just settle with the best of the lot and find a spot for them. I mean, it's not ideal, but it is kind of what it is for us at the moment.
I had a bit of a controversial opinion about her during the World Cup, when that number three position wasn't really cemented when Lara wasn't scoring runs and when Taz wasn't scoring runs, I thought it would be a good idea to push Trisha's experience up into that number three position. Having said that, though, now that Lara has kind of found herself and is scoring runs on the slow wickets in England, I do think that spot is hers now. So I don't think there is that position open for Trish to come in anymore. But yeah, I just thought it was a little bit controversial to talk about.
Yeah, she's the thing about Trisha, she's a phenomenal bat, and she can actually, she does show sometimes. She comes in and she scores a couple of runs and you're kind of like, oh, where do you come from, right? The only problem with her is that she hasn't done herself any justice over the years. So she's been in that side for years and years and years and years, and she's not really contributed to her full potential. And as a result, kind of you could see the coaches have like not really allowed her to stay in the top positions for that long. But at the same time, when you have someone they free-flowing, she doesn't really like to think about things too much. She just wants the bat. She doesn't want to overthink things. She's not as complicated. The moment you make things complicated for her, she usually doesn't like, she goes completely into a shell and plays a completely different game. And the moment you start doing that, and then they open with her, and then they play at seven, and then they play at four, and then, you know, that when that consistency, goes away, as a player, it's really difficult to understand what your role is. And every single time you go out to bat, you feel nervous about what it is you're trying to achieve. So I kind of feel that, yes, it is a position she could have definitely taken on. Whether she would, she hasn't proven, though, that it's something that she does with success. And I think Hilton has been with her for long enough to know that that sort of instability and fluctuation in putting a in places, it doesn't do well for her.
Yeah, having said that, though, Hilton has been there for a long time, and you know, do you think that it's been too long?
100%. I can't even. It's too long now. No, you know, I'm not saying he's bad or anything. Like, it's just time to, you know, the cricket evolves, players evolve, teams evolve. You see, you look at, like we were talking about Tanay taking over the captaincy, how that affects the team. Yeah, I think it's time for a change. It's time for a new, like, fresh piece of eye. I mean, Hilton was the coach when I was still playing, and I mean, I'm almost 120. So, you know, I think it's time for us to really move on and get some fresh ideas and just a fresh perspective. And honestly, I think we should try and invest in some overseas coach that's involved in the WBBL, or, you know, someone that's used to working with women's cricketers, but at that very high commercial level. So,
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. I mean, I feel...
Sorry, yeah.
Sorry, Maddie, we just keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to say. Do we go local again? Do we go with Denisha? Or do we just go and find the best out there that understands women? Because you can't come bring in somebody who's been dealing with men's cricket most of the time but doesn't understand the aspects of the ladies. What do they need? So I'm excited. But will it happen before World Cup, T20, or will it happen after? I'm hoping something can happen to shake things up.
Yeah, I think in the ideal world, what we want to do, or what I, if this was my domain, it's not, I know, but, you know, if I was head of Cricket South Africa now and I could make this decision, I think one of the things I would do is I would get someone that's experienced in this high-paid domestic women's tournaments, let them coach our team, and then let Denisha or local coaches shadow them as assistant coaches, because that way that information and that experience gets pushed over, right? If you're just pulling local people into it, like for example, we're using Danisha because she's obviously next in line for some position like that. Once again, you're bringing in someone that understands the women's game, but has not coached or played at that level. Okay, so she's played for South Africa, but in a very amateur world. Okay, and she's a phenomenal. I love Danisha. She's a phenomenal person, great cricket brain, etc. But I think she still needs a bit of experience of sort of that professional cricket, semi-pro cricket tournaments, understanding sort of the pace of that, because the pace is completely different at that level, right? So,
yeah, and I think she's going to kind of like get a feel for how it is to coach at an international level with this under 19 team that's coming up. And yes, under 19 cricket is completely different to senior international cricket, but it's going to be exciting to see how she kind of, firstly, how the selectors and how Danisha selects that side, what kind of dynamic she's looking for amongst the players. And then to see how we level up against the other countries at under 19 level.
Yeah, so we've got under 19 to Namibia now. From the 24 that's in the squad, they're choosing 8. I'm wondering who those 18 will be. And how will they perform against Namibia? And what if this team wins the World Cup? Would that give Danisha an upper hand? I don't know. No, Jay just looked at me very funny saying like, what do you mean? There's people like India and Australia out there.
Yeah, they are very big teams who have under 19 players who are playing cricket at WBBL level, who are playing in the 100, who, like India, Shefali Verma is playing in the national senior team. And it's very worrying for me to think about what's going to happen at the under 19 World Cup. As South Africa, because I kind of like know a couple of the girls who are at the TAP camp now, which is happening right now, a very young, very, very young squad. Lots of talent and lots of potential, but I don't believe they're at the same level as the other countries yet. Having said that, though, in 2 or 3 years' time, that might change and it could lift them up, but the level of coaching and training that they're currently getting needs to continue. It can't stop straight after the World Cup is played. And it's going to be exciting to see how Danisha is able to take those players from where they are now to the World Cup and then after the World Cup. Because when you think about it, those players are the future of our country. And yes, there are players who are in between under 19 level and national level because there's a big gap between that. But are they going to throw those under 19 players straight into national level? Like, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens after that World Cup.
No, I think it's great. I think like we haven't had a lot of under 19 level cricket, right? And you know, it's where it all starts, and it's where we really should focus. Okay, I mean, it's what makes the other the top countries in the world so good, is that the cricket at under 19 level is pretty solid. And I mean, it's a great opportunity for us to go and measure ourselves against the best of the world. And it kind of will also give the people like Hilton and them an idea of, you know, how far we are along in terms of preparing our depth for our national side. Like Jenna says, like there are some players there that are already playing for the senior side in other countries. But that's okay. I mean, it doesn't mean we can't compete or we can't win, or, you know, I don't really, to be completely honest, know enough about our about the youth sides to give too much input.
Yeah, so if we just look at the team, the squad at the TAP camp right now, more than half of those players don't even play senior provincial cricket. And to me, that's very worrying because they've never faced anybody near Shipnam's pace, and then you're going to get a Australian bowlers who are bowling something similar to that. And yeah, it's worrying, but at the same time it's exciting for those girls to get that exposure. And yeah, there hasn't really been that under 19 international level in the last 10 years. So yeah, Chris, you played, I read somewhere that you played under 21 cricket Do you think that there's a place for that now, like from under 19 then to play South African under 21 and then Nash like senior?
Yeah, so the first time, but I think at the time it was just the way it was kind of just sort of the way it was structured, because England had an under 21 team that came out to play in one of our senior provincial tournaments, and this was 1999, I think. Yeah, long time ago. So because of that team coming out, kind of South Africa had matched that with an under 21 team to also allow anyone from under 19s and sort of anyone from that senior tournament to be part of that team. I don't necessarily think, to be honest, we have the depth to have so many teams under over 19, right? We'd have to really go search long and far and hard. But I guess because what we want to do is, like you say, we want to get these people when they're not under 19 anymore to get them into the senior setup rather than still baby them through like youth groups, right? The assumption should be that if you're good enough to be in an under 21 player, you should really just play senior provincial cricket, right? That's kind of where we should be at. But I don't think anywhere else in the world they do it in any case anymore. So, I don't think so. I don't think it won't work in South Africa anyway. We don't have enough depth at the moment.
Okay, because if I just think back about the investment that CSA made into players, because the World Cup was supposed to happen, I might mix up my years, in 2020, is that right? The Under 19 World Cup. So there was a lot of investment into players that are my age and not that are like now 21. So it would hopefully, some of those players haven't fallen through the cracks and are not playing provincial cricket anymore. But it just hopefully that those players haven't been lost through the system. And obviously, there were challenges with that group of players. If you look at Ellis Marie Marks, Paulina Mashishi, those kind of girls, they invested a lot of time and money into, and then COVID kind of disrupted that. So hopefully, a lot of those players just like get pulled into their senior provincial teams and get worked on, which I do believe has happened, even though some of them have been lost a little bit. But it was, just cool. Thank you for your input on that under 21 side.
Okay, exciting. Okay, future of women's cricket is looking good, especially all over the world. In South Africa, we hope that CSA can play their part and keep on investing and keeping us, treating the ladies the same as the men eventually. I know it's not happening, but we'll get there. Quickly, so much cricket happening. We've got the ODIs, the T20s, and then we immediately Commonwealth. And then after that, we've got 100, and then we're going WBBL. What are you most excited about seeing?
All of it.
Well, I think the Commonwealth is a good one. And it's always those sort of tournaments are always really special. It is exciting and it's different as well. And I'm looking forward to see how we perform outside of something that is still quite high pressured, but not quite the World Cup. So I think we have a good chance there, to be honest. And I'm quite excited about that.
Yeah, in our group, we're in Group B with New Zealand, England, and Sri Lanka. And yeah, I guess we have to beat New Zealand and England, especially to get to the semifinals. And Group A, it is Australia, India, Pakistan, and Barbados. So it's a good chance, I reckon.
Yeah, we can definitely beat any of those teams. I mean, I think that's what the nice thing is of the last World Cup, is that we've proven that, you know, we have the ability to stand up to any of them and really compete. And that's what I'm saying. Like, even when you said we have to play New Zealand, England, it doesn't seem as daunting anymore. We know they're really good sides. They work really hard, but so do we. And, you know, we've also proven that we can beat every single one of them. So there's not a side there that we've never beaten other than Australia. But yeah, I mean, we've come close enough, so my money is on South Africa.
Yay! Okay, Gina, your money, where are you putting it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to put it on our own team as well.
Awesome. Cool. Okay, any last thoughts on women's cricket in South Africa, in the world? Any input?
I just wanted to say that it's very exciting to see that New Zealand is paying equal pay for the female and male teams. And I do hope that this kind of sets other countries off in a similar direction, and that women's cricket and women's sport worldwide just keeps on going on the up. I've noticed a South African TV on SuperSport that there are many more female, all different sports being broadcast, which is very exciting to see. And if there's more airtime for female sports, then female sports worldwide will grow incredibly, because I do think that it's a hot topic. So if there are any investors listening to our podcast, you know, this is the time now to invest in women's cricket, in women's sport overall.
Yeah, I think from my side, I don't have too much to add, you know, you said most of it, but yeah, no, I think it's exciting times. You can see a lot of the teams are going through a bit of a build-up again, some new names, some new youngsters coming through, which means like my era is definitely dying down. It's such a shame. But yeah, it's exciting to see all the youngsters coming through and the continued support and how far we've come. I know we're still not where we want to be, but I think we can't be like thankful enough for how well or how fast this game has grown, and it's fantastic to see.
Yay, awesome. Thank you two for joining us in this podcast. I think we'll check in again, have another chat after the England tour, just pre-Commonwealth. And yeah, and then we'll see what happens, see if there's any more retirements, see if the Nay's coming back, and we'll see what's the makeup of the teams and how well the under-19 girls are doing. Thank you both.
Thank you, Maddie.
Thank you, Maddie.
Thank you all. See ya. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Women's Cricket South Africa podcast. Please find us on our website, womenscricket.co.za, and Women's Cricket South Africa on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and wherever you get your podcasts. Catch you in the next episode, and we're out.